Here we are, we're in Te Tahi Bay at the residence of Jane Paul, and today is the 10th of June 2009. It's 25 to 11 on a very calm but overcast day. We're recording onto a Marantz solid state digital recorder, and we're going to be discussing the life and times and Jane's memory of her grandfather, Robert Bradford Williams. So perhaps you'd like to introduce yourself.
I'm Jane Paul, wife of Barry Paul. I have four children: Anthony, my eldest son; Barry Peter, my second son; Michael, my third son; and Maria, my only daughter. And we've lived in this house for the last 48 years. Prior to that, I lived in Wellington, in Goring Street. For anyone who knows, that's off Tinakori Road. I was born actually in Molesworth Street on the 1st of October 1936. I have a brother and sister who have since died. There's really two families of us, as my mother was married twice. Yeah, so there's really a very large family of us. And the reason that I'm doing this with you, Gabor, is because some years ago, when I was a little bit sick, my extended family said to me, would I please write down my memoirs of my grandfather, because he lived with us for short periods, one in Molesworth Street and the second time in Goring Street when we shifted up there. This was before he went into the Wutaki Sanatorium. And the reason he went in there in those days was that he hadn't been very well, and he went into the Wellington Hospital. However, because of the earthquakes at the time, they didn't think it was very safe for them, so they shifted all the elderly to Otaki. That's actually how he got there. I remember him not well, and I wished I'd been older and asked him lots of things. I remember my brother and I, as small children, when our mother would go out, we would get into the lobby where she kept his wig and gown and papers, and we would try on the wig and gown. He would either be the lawyer one day or I would. He also had his Freemasonry pieces there. He had a little bag and an apron, gloves, a ring, which I know we used to also try on, unbeknownst, of course, to our mother, put them back very carefully. And I think I mentioned to you some time ago that eventually, when my mother sold the wig and the gown, it was to a young university student that had put an advertisement in the paper. He was looking for a wig at the time, that's right, and they were very hard to get after the war. So she sold him the wig, but she also gave him the gown because she said it was getting on a bit, but she felt that her father would like him to wear it, which and I'm sorry, I can't even remember the young man's name. Grandfather also was very fond of lemonade, and he used to send my brother and I, but mostly my brother George, down to the grocery shop at the bottom of our street to get him a bottle of lemonade, and he'd always share it with us. That was something we liked having with him. He had lost his sight by then, and I know my mother used to read to him, and she would say to her, or told me later on as I got older, that it was during the war, and he would get very upset about things that were going on. And she'd say to him, well, Father, you know, you really can't do anything about it. Don't worry about it. But she had to read the war news to him daily. So obviously he was still interested. He was getting a bit forgetful, because I also remember her saying to me that she would try to put a little, she would write out a little card with his name and address and just try and hide it somewhere in his coat, just in case he was somewhere and forgot where he was, because he was 79, I think, 70 at that stage. He didn't have dementia or Alzheimer's, but it was just a precaution, I think. But if he found the card, he would say to her, and do you think I don't know my own name? And would get quiet. So she had to find devious ways of doing this when he did go out. And partly I think this was due to, because he was, you know, I mentioned before, losing his sight. Mm-hmm. I really wished I'd been older and could have asked him other things, because I, again, I'd said to you, I think he was really a remarkable man. The fact that he was born either into slavery, as you suggest, or just after, I'm not sure. Mm. We didn't know a great deal about his family. He used to ride home. My mother told me that. And she and her sister, as children, would have to ride too. So presumably his mother was still there when he went back in, now, 1908, I think.
Right, so he went back just a visit to
back. He went back twice, yeah, he went twice. But I'm only referring to 1908 because it's recorded here. But I'm sure my mother said he'd went home twice.
When you knew him, obviously he'd been in New Zealand for a large part of his life. Had he kept his Southern American accent? I mean, do you recall his, and especially with his music background, I imagine he would have had a very sort of deep, booming voice.
No, the only thing it's funny you should mention that, because the only thing I remember, and I think I spoke to my mother about it, he would refer to my woman. He would say, rather than my wife, my woman. And at the time, I just thought it was a bit strange, but it's a very American thing,
American.
I think.
And
but that was all. He didn't have he had a very, as I recall, and my mother, of course, said he had a very nice speaking voice, but she was probably biased. Well, he must have, because he was a singer as well. He also did a lot of preaching at different churches after they'd sung it with the choir, with the Fitz choir. He was at one stage had sort of tossed up whether he'd do ministry or law, and of course the law won. So he must have had a very good speaking voice, I would imagine. And I think I said to you too, Garble, he was probably quite exotic at that stage. He was very tall, he was 6'1", he was very athletic. He used to swim in the Thorndon Baths, and he would also bike. This is only my mother telling me this. Mm-hmm. I don't remember him doing this, because he would have been a much younger man. And he would bike over the Rimutakas occasionally for fitness. And there's something I've read here, and I can't remember where I've put it, where he won a boxing match at the Williston Academy, either there. Wasn't Yale, I think it was the Williston. So he was an athletic type of man.
A Renaissance man, doesn't he, with the athletic ability, the music and artistic ability, and of course the extraordinary legal background that he had. And of course, also becoming New Zealand's first and probably only black mayor.
Yes.
And so he became mayor of the Onslow Borough Council, which today would have covered the area of Nio, Kandala, and Crofton Downs.
Big area.
Large area. Do you know anything about that particular part of his life?
Well, no, unfortunately, I don't. I know that he was elected and unopposed, so he was 6 years, I think it was eight. I do have it, but I just haven't got it on hand. I think perhaps you might be able to get something from Murray Pillar on that. No, I don't know a great deal about that. I myself was looking to see if there were any institutions around, perhaps swimming pools or something like that, that had been opened by him in his mayoral capacity, because I know he attended dinners when the Duke and Duchess came out here. He and his wife attended that, as a private citizen and in his capacity as mayor. So I was just wondered if I could perhaps find something out about that. He was, I think, very popular. He threw himself into enjoying and contributing to his life here. He always speaks well of the country, and it appears from things that he's written that anything that he could learn from overseas, that he could bring back for the benefit of the country. But then I'm sure there must have been times when he was perhaps a bit lonely. I might just say this too, that being, you mentioned before, the first black American mayor, I don't recall my mother ever saying that he was racially abused or that they were. I can remember a neighbour of ours, Miss Sheridan. She was an elderly lady, and strangely enough, she looked very much like my mother. And she was telling me, when they were little and lived in Tinnacoo Road, when my mother and her sister and brother lived in Tinnacoo Road, that they were very pretty children. And she and some of her friends used to like to put them in the middle and dance around them. They thought they were princesses. Well, I suppose that would only be because, again, they were a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But I always remember Miss Sheridan telling me that. He was, I think, a very good father to them. If anything, probably spoilt them a bit. I know he certainly did my mother. I can't really think of anything else.
Did your mother have what would be regarded today as distinctly Afro-American features?
No, not particularly. There's a photo of my mother there.
Oh, yes.
She was often perhaps Maori or Lebanese, that sort of very sharp-featured. Mm-hmm. Both she and her sister and brother, I thought, were rather attractive. Mm-hmm. But, of course, their mother was a fine-looking woman, Kate, Robert's wife. There's a photo of her there up there. I think she's a lovely woman.
How old were you when Robert passed away?
I would have been just over six, maybe seven. We'd shifted up to Goring Street, and I'd started school from Molesworth Street, so I would have been about six and a half. Enough to remember, you know, seeing him and talking to him, but not long enough to ask him things that I would have perhaps at 14 or 20 loved to have spoken to him about. But I remember him as being tall, and naturally he'd be tall because I would be only a little person in those days, but he was tall. And I don't know if this is a thing I dreamed, or I remember we had a photo of him too, walking. He always had a cane, used a cane, and we had a photo, and I don't know where it's gone to, and he sort of has his tongue in his cheek. It's a pity you can't see him, sort of like that. And I often, when I think of him, or close my eyes, I can see him in that stance, and that probably was just a little idiosyncrasy he had, or no, I don't know. But,